The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. This is our ninth episode, where we're going to be talking about the eighth issue of the Starman comic book. And I'm Brent.
I'm Lydia.
And yeah, we're gonna talk. As always, we are brought to you by Comics League International, which, I mean, it's basically me. But it's where you can find us through iTunes. It's where you can find us on Facebook. You know, you can go to the Comics League International site. You know, let us know what you think.
Please.
Yeah. So, like I said, today we're going to talk about the eighth issue with a cover date of June. Yeah, June of 95. And, you know, I looked up a little bit of stuff, what happens. I found a few things that kind of interested me. Uh-huh. And that's really what I'm going for, is stuff that interests us. So, you know, if we miss something big, whoopsie.
And we're from very different backgrounds, so yeah. The things that we are concerned about are very different.
So what I got for June of 95 is that June began the busiest hurricane season in 62 years.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. Hurricane.
I know. You know, like typhoons and stuff like that, so that's always exciting. Mm-hmm. Now this one, I'll admit I'm not much of a baseball fan, but this just still strikes me as neat. The Montreal Expos pitcher Pedro Martinez became the second Major League Baseball pitcher to pitch a perfect game leading into the 10th inning.
So what's a perfect game? Sorry.
I think a perfect game is when they get like no hits, just all strikeouts.
Oh.
Yeah, now, but it did say leading into the 10th inning, so I don't know if maybe the 10th inning he could have got like 100 runs. I don't know. But yeah, there you go. The other point, Japanese police rescue 365 hostages from a hijacked All Nippon Airways Flight 857 at Hakodate Airport. The hijacker was armed with a knife and demanded the release of Shoko Asahara from the Omryu cult, basically the people behind the sarin gas attacks.
That we talked about episodes ago.
So I saw that and was like, wow, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Also, Jonas Salk, the American medical researcher who developed the first polio vaccine, he died at 80 during June. And I looked up two hit songs. We had the Billboard Hot number one, which was the Bryan Adams song, Have You Really Ever Loved a Woman?
Have you really ever loved a woman?
You know, tell me, have you really, really ever loved a woman? Whereas also there was the Billboard Alternative number one, which was Misery by the band Soul Asylum.
Misery? Why do I not know any of these songs?
I don't know, because Misery, I mean, well, this was 95, so this would have been, would this have been the end of my sophomore year or the end of my freshman year? It's so hard.
Guys, I was 7, so...
Well, that's why. You were probably listening to, I don't know, the Teletubbies?
Thomas the Tank Engine, I don't know. Yeah, I did watch the Teletubbies. Like, Teletubbies was... I was a bit old for it, but I did watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely missed out. I was definitely too old.
No. Don't say that. You're never too old for Teletubbies.
Yeah, I'll find out when we start watching with my little boy who's only one now. I'll have to start watching shows like that soon.
All right.
Yeah.
Teletubbies. I'm just googling Teletubbies.
No worries. Well, that's all the kind of, you know, big exciting stuff that I found for June of 95. But that's what was going on during the cover date of Starman number 8.
Number 8. So what is Starman number 8 about?
What is? Can you tell us?
Of course. That's my job today. I'm doing the synopsis, you guys. And it's going to be really short because there's really... Well, first of all, I think we can review that this is not going to be a very long recording because I have to go to my day job. But this was a pretty straightforward issue. Mm. So, the story opens with Jack getting all geared up and, you know, because this is a continuation from the last scene in the previous issue. And he's getting ready to go back to the circus to defeat Bliss, that guy who owns the circus, this time in the dead of night. Dun, dun, dun. Arriving at the circus, he meets the freaks, note the parentheses, who tell him that they are under Bliss's control, which goes slack when he's asleep. And Jack is learning. Jack is learning a bit about these captives when Bliss wakes up.
I'm awake.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of creepy because there's this scene where all the performers, they're like afflicted, and then yeah, that's how Bliss affects them, and then they have a showdown. They, meaning Jack and Bliss, and. There are two, like, interludes in this story, which are like, quick cuts to the cop, Matthew O'Dare. You know, you might remember him from the earlier issues. And his corrupt ways, you know, first interlude. And second, the second interlude is about an innocent man being consumed by, once again, a poster that has come to life. Okay, so back to Jack and Bliss. The blue man from the previous issue... what's his name? Michael, I think? Steps up, and together him and Jack defeat Bliss, freeing all of the performers at the circus from Bliss's control. So, that's the story for issue 8.
Yay.
Yes.
So, let's dive in and I guess start with the cover.
Mm-hmm. I would like to imagine that 7 and 8 are one big issue.
Mm-hmm-hmm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Well, because even the title here was A Night at the Circus 2.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and yet, I don't really see the parallels between this cover and the previous one, which is kind of cool in its own way.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot simpler, this cover, than issue 7. Right?
Yeah, whereas 7 was, you know, that kind of, how would you say it, like, it felt much more, like, designed graphically, right. And, like, full of symbolism, and like, ooh, what's going on?
Yep.
This one, it almost feels just like a throwback to kind of like an old monster movie kind of poster.
Right. I kind of get what you mean. This might come up as we go through the story, but there were a lot of references to things like from the silent movie era, I feel. Yeah. I don't know if that was just me, but... and, you know, where... And for me, that era in film was very much characterized by horror, you know? Like Phantom of the Opera. Phantom of the Opera, they had... There was this book in my primary school library, which was, like, about... It was, like, bringing the black and white film into print form.
Really?
Yes. I remember that very clearly because...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it just left a really strong impression. So there was like a series of books that was Phantom of the Opera, Frankenstein, and Dracula. And they were all like black and white pictures of the films, and like each scene, it was written as a piece of fiction. So, but the pictures were from the film.
I think I remember having something similar to that in the public library for like the Frankenstein and the Dracula movie, but I don't know if I ever saw anything like that for Phantom of the Opera. That would have been really neat.
Yeah, that was my very first encounter with Phantom of the Opera. That's why I think it left such an impression. Okay, so that's the kind of vibe, right, that we're getting from the cover.
So one thing about, I guess the kind of two main things I kind of get from this cover. One of them, especially after reading the issue, and I'll talk more about this as we get the issue, is the woman on it, whose, I guess, name I should remember, but I don't. I'm a terrible podcaster. Oh, no.
Was it
Octavia?
Octavia, yes.
But she feels much more sexualized on this cover than on the inside of the book. We've got a breast exposed. We've got the kind of dress scarf thing that you know seems like all she has to do is move a little bit, and the nether regions would be exposed. It's much more of a... But then again, that might be in keeping with the idea of the kind of pulpy atmosphere. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, this is not a dress. This is like a curtain.
And yeah. It's like a curtain with a neck strap.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think... I did feel... while reading the comic, that apart from that one, that you remember, there was this minor character, Rachel, I think, the gay woman who was eaten by the poster.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, apart from her, I do feel that most of the women who appear in this comic are quite busty and wear revealing clothing. So. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. And we can kind of talk more about that when we get into the issue. My other thing about this cover in particular is, you know, I mean, there's lots of different schools of thoughts on what makes an effective color and cover. Is it just like a stylistic thing, an eye-catching thing to get people to pick up the issue? Is it like a preview of what's in the issue?
Right.
You know, thinking about it, I kind of wonder if having Bliss in this form, if it's too much of a reveal for the comic inside.
To be honest, I didn't even know it was Bliss until after I finished reading it. So, you know what, I was just thinking, if I were looking at Starman for the first time, if I walked into a shop and this was the issue on display, I would probably pick this up, because here we have an attractive woman as depicted according to the media standards with octopus hands. You know, she has, like, you know, tentacles instead of hands. And behind her is this monster incubus. We don't know yet that he's an incubus at this point. So when you look at this cover, it does make you want to open it up. So,
yeah. I mean, to me, it's a good cover, but by comparison to the earlier ones, I think it's one of the weaker covers. It's, you know, which, I mean, it's still good. It's great art, very evocative, but I don't feel as, like, kind of move to pick up what's on the inside, as I did say, certainly from the last issues.
I get what you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's true.
So it's not bad, but it's not my favorite.
Mm. I've just realized that that Jack and Octavia are looking like this because Bliss is sucking their energy. I don't know how else to describe this look, but it's like they received a Dementor's kiss.
Yeah, like I definitely see that with Jack. For Octavia, I don't know, there's a little bit. Jack looks like he's being kissed by a Dementor. Octavia, there's a little bit too much swoon.
Oh.
In it for me to kind of read it clearly as her being, like, storyline, yes, I completely agree.
Yep.
And the cover, it's kind of like, well, is she... She doesn't look as tormented as Jack does.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and she's, like, supporting him by his shoulders.
yeah. But that kind of reads the thing to me. Is she supporting him, or is she holding on to him? Like, it's hard to tell where she falls in the spectrum to me.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. Agreed. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Inside?
Inside.
Mm.
I'm so hungry!
Are you hungry?
I'm hungry.
I'm kind of hungry too. Another thing that'll speed us along.
Okay, there's no food in this issue.
Nope.
But we have A Night at the Circus 2. And here again, the title night, the night in the title is spelled K in parentheses. And night, it's like kind of a wordplay.
Haha.
Yes. Mm. Do you call parentheses anything other than parentheses?
I think just parentheses, because there's the different types of parentheses. Like there's ellipses, mm-hmm. but I think those are those the more squiggly ones?
I think ellipses are the ten ten ten.
Oh, okay. Whoopsies.
What's that curly thing? I know that was like a fancy name, but where I come from, we call these brackets.
Oh, you call them brackets?
Yeah, the one like a night at the circus that parentheses, we call them brackets. And the squiggly line is a tilde.
Aha. Aha.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yep. Anyway, you guys go look at the copy to find out what we're talking about.
I think how I was taught, you know, again, not to, just to make sure people know I'm not saying I was taught correctly, just say there's differences. Mm. Brackets were the ones that are more boxy.
Oh.
That's how I was taught, I believe. But, you know, and this issue was brought to us by James Robinson, writer, Tony Harris, penciler, Wade Von Grobiger, inker, John Workman, letterer, Gregory Wright, colorist, Chuck Kim, assistant editor, and Archie Goodwin, editor.
Yay. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
It's a really good issue. I really enjoyed it.
Mm, me too. Mm. All right, so let's dive in.
Yeah.
What's the first thing that we see?
You know, it's not the first thing that strikes me, but it's a little detail that I love about this this page,
mm-hmm.
is Jack's pinkies.
Oh! Yeah. Like,
He's standing there, he looks like he's ready for combat, but the way he's got his pinkies extended on the cosmic rod,
yeah.
I don't know, it just makes it him... It gives an aura that he's, you know...
Not having a spot of tea?
Yes. I was gonna say, like, it makes it feel like more of like a martial item, like not just like I'm gonna poke you with my stick, but just you know, it makes it look cooler.
Yeah,
as tea
in
always
Japanese,
does.
There's this word called kamae, for martial arts, and it's like basically your stance, your what do you call it, the way you hold your weapon and stand, and people actually have to practice their kamae. you know, for a long time. It's not, they're just standing there holding their weapon, and I get it. Like, his pinkies are part of his kamae.
And it looks like he's practiced that.
Yes. Oh, but you know what? The rod is the thing that stood out for me the most. I did not notice his pinkies until you talked about them, but it's because of the coloring, I think. It's like bam in the middle of the page, and it's the only yellow thing. It's everything else is like cool. The colors are very cool, blues and greens, a little bit of purple. Yeah, so. He's at the circus. I didn't know that. Okay, yes, sorry.
And the harpoonness of it really stands out on this page.
Yeah, that point. Yeah. I wonder why it's made like that. We should ask Ted.
I'll call him up. And I like how right away, you know, I mean, it's a callback to the previous issue. Another thing that just kind of lets us know, like, read issue 7. But it's the way that, you know, we had that strong ending of, like, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to mess some people up. And then right away, this is like, what am I thinking? Mm-hmm. This is, I'm not, what? I look ridiculous.
Yeah.
And again, it's that kind of Jack playing the hero and then undercutting himself. Yeah. Lack of faith.
Yeah. And, you know, I really love the words in this opening. Anger bred my earlier words. I love it when people use, you know, non-collocations. I don't know what's the word for it. Like,
you're above me there. Non-collocations.
I mean, pairing anger and bread. You know, that's I really like it.
Yeah. Not just because you're hungry. Anger bread sounds delicious.
No. Bread, the noun.
Oh, gotcha.
And bread, the verb. Two different things. It did not cross my mind. Oh, my. Okay, anger bread. Can you imagine anger bread? It's like, what?
We're going way off field. We're getting way off field.
Okay. Let's come back.
We have a set. We don't have a limited time for this episode. Oh, goodness.
That's true. Okay. Okay. Well, what's going on? He's undercutting himself, but he's still at the circus, and he's going to take on Bliss.
Yeah, and it's a great opening, and I like the idea of Jack. It's an interesting thing here that, you know, we have so far. We've had Jack's main powers being a glowing rod. And flight and energy. And this, I guess, this is kind of his second mission. Is him having to sneak around.
Yeah.
It's a neat difference from what he's kind of done in the past.
The first one was when he defeated Kyle, was it?
Yeah. But I was just thinking, we could probably just jump that whole, or lump that whole opening arc as one mission.
Yeah. That's true, you know, saving Ted and stuff. Yeah. But this one, he's back at the saving thing. He is saving the circus performers. I don't know, I find it more politically correct to call them circus performers, because they called themselves special people in this issue.
That's right.
And then Jack didn't get it until, you know, Octavia said, well, freaks.
Yeah.
And, you know, tells a lot about society, as it reflects society as well, I think, when it comes to this. But go back to the comic. Love his expression on the second page. Jack Knight.
Yeah, and it's totally like, if they'd put a sound there, it would have been
it's hilarious because he's like climbing. You know, there's like one of those record scratching sounds where he's like doing the Mission Impossible moves and like sneaking in.
Yeah,
and
you know. And I love these periods at the beginning of this book.
And this happens basically from that facial expression, and then through panel the whole third page, it's basically Jack Knight yutz.
yeah, I get what you mean. I really love the little goblin looking people. Yeah. They're so funny. They're like teasing him, and the way this goblin guy holds the rod is like. You can imagine the soundtrack. It's like playful and funny all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. they're just totally mocking him. Mm. Oh, it's a fun sequence. Yeah. And I think that I think it helps that the background and Jack's facial expressions, it doesn't feel as ominous. As if this were like an actual life-threatening thing. It almost feels like light-hearted, even though we don't know really what's going on yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for one, the little characters in the background, you know, the goblins, they aren't scary. In the previous issue, when they were attacking him, they had these really gruesome grimaces on their faces, but over here they are like, you know, making nanny, nanny, boo, boo kind of faces. So, it's literally that, right? they do, I think these details, you know, the expressions do lend that lightheartedness to these panels. So, yeah.
And then we get Jack waking up.
He blacked out at some point. I see. Well,
she's just noticed it. She's strangling him.
Oh, so that's what that black box is for. Okay. I see. Alright. And so he officially meets Octavia. And she apologizes. And I like the exchange here where she says, "I'm sorry for the rude way we brought you here." And he's like, "Rude? Calling me a scrawny dog is rude. This, I'd say, is a little more than that."
Yeah.
Yeah, cute. So, like, he's always, I think, one thing about Jack, or rather about the writing, is, you know, he's always making light of the situation.
He's always making light of it, and it never crosses into the realm of feeling like artificially quippy. And I feel that that's like a little bit of a tightrope walk, that he comes off as a little clever and referential, but he doesn't sound like there should be like a sitcom laugh track going on behind him.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it feels natural. It doesn't feel like you should be calling me a scrawny dork is rude. Like, it...
Yeah, I get what you mean. And I do also feel that this is to juxtapose, you know, the times where he talks and you hear his thoughts, you know, as the reader, and he's always confessing how he's afraid.
Yeah.
It's like a defense mechanism.
Yeah, it's almost like Spider-Man in a way.
Ah!
Yeah.
Okay. I see the parallel. Right. Next page?
Yeah. So we've got, we're kind of, this is where we're introduced to the situation of the special people. Now, we kind of talked about this on the cover, and I don't know, this seems like a decent place to talk about it, is, again, I think, talking about fine lines. I think, in a way, Tony Harris is kind of striding that line there of drawing a very scantily clad Octavia in a way that, I mean, and maybe this is by comic book standards, that doesn't feel as sexualized, that doesn't feel as, what would you say, like, eroticized? As other artists might have.
It does leave little to the imagination, but I don't know if this would would offend anyone, but she does not look very feminine here. You know, the shadows under her chin, you know, on the neck, and the thickness of her eyebrows. Her body is feminine, but you know, tentacles and So I too agree that it's not as sexualized as a lot of, for example, Japanese, you know, comics can be.
I mean, one of the things that superhero comics, not even just to go outside of them, because Japanese comics can be, and so can superhero comics, they can be very guilty of anytime you have a female character on panel, on the page, she's posed in a way that kind of feels like it could be out of, you know, a very, a pinup magazine you would not want your mother to find.
I see.
And even though, like I said here, Octavia is dressed in a manner that, like, that leaves little to the imagination, it doesn't feel as though it's kind of supposed to be as titillating as other figures. I don't know, maybe.
I mean, I don't have much experience with superhero comics, but I do know a lot about Japanese ones, so, which is why I brought it up. But if superhero comics, you know, by with your experience, if you say that it's not as this one's not as titillating as those, then I believe you. Yeah, because it has come up. I have friends writing for video game journals, and it has come up. She's a woman, but she writes about it. So
yeah,
you know, people talk about these things, and it's incredibly hard to write about these kind of things in these circles, because everybody's gonna, like, call you a feminist
and being it's a feminist, slur for some reason.
Yeah. Being a feminist doesn't mean you're a misogynist. So yeah. I don't know. Yeah. No. So yeah. Okay. We have established that, you know, for all of you listening, that we are cool with the way Tony Harris has handled the depiction of Octavia.
Tony Harris, you're doing good.
Yeah, stamp of approval. Okay. All right. Over here, we learn finally that Bliss isn't human. He isn't even just a superpowered human. He isn't human.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a surprise for me. Yeah.
Why?
Why was it? He looks so human.
okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you were going for because he looks so human, or if it's like, oh, they're bringing in more supernatural elements. I wasn't sure.
Okay. Yeah, because until I saw him turning into the monster, I believed that he wasn't human. But and I, on the fourth page, I think there's this dwarf.
That Renee.
What's his name? I don't know.
Renee.
Oh, okay. Renee, it's obviously a clue, an Easter egg of some sort, because they specially talked about his background.
Yes.
So I'm curious.
With the bad dwarf.
Who is the bad dwarf?
Ooh.
Yeah,
that's definitely something that does get brought back later. I can't remember how late in the series it comes back, but I'm fairly certain the bad dwarf occurs. And I don't know, it's such a strong story of not only is he getting not only is Bliss getting the energy the from these people suffering, but he's also doing whatever he can to increase their suffering. He's making Jewish Renee dress as a Nazi. He takes Octavia and her feelings about herself and her body, and really putting her on exposure He's doing all these little things to just be like, yep, let me make you suffer just that much. Let me make the humiliation that much deeper.
So it's like, it really brings a different meaning to inhuman. I feel, he is a true villain.
Now here's a question for you. Now I didn't have any problems with this, but kind of looking through and discussing it now, I'm wondering, in this comic, it's basically like 1, 2, 3, 4, about 4 pages with a decent amount of dialogue that's kind of all exposition. Now, I think it's flows, and I really kind of enjoy how Robinson keeps the banter going. But I'm wondering if do you think this comes close to being just too much of telling instead of showing? Like, I don't...
I think you're talking about your 4 pages start at where?
Like about when we have her kind of saying, you know, we had no choice. I fear you'd confront Bliss unforewarned. And then starting from that page, we kind of get the, and up until Bliss wakes up, we just have a lot of her saying like, oh, here's the history of Bliss, and here's the history of Renee, and here's some other kind of just exposition. You know, this is Michael's more than any of us. I'm wondering if this comes a little too close to just being like exposition dump, as opposed to, I don't know, more smooth storytelling.
Yeah, I would say that if I were just approaching it from, you know, an editing perspective, I would take out the bit about Renee and how he lost his memory. Because at the back you do say, like, Renee's Jewish, but you know, he makes him dress up as a Nazi, and that shows that Bliss is perverted. But when it comes to the rest of that second bit where, you know, he, Renee talks about...
the being pocket encyclopedia.
That I felt made it a little bit too wordy, but... on the whole, if you take that away, I felt that most of the exposition was actually kind of necessary to paint that picture of exactly how bad Bliss is and Michael's potential and how, I don't know, it just illustrated the suffering a lot more. It makes it all the more real for the reader, I think. It helps the reader suspend a lot more belief that, oh, okay, these guys, they really do want to be free from Bliss. It's not just they can't run away. That this is how much they're suffering. It's not just, you know, a setup for Jack to look like the hero. It's just, you know, it's real. Their suffering is real.
And then we get, you know, Jack saying he's going to fight and he's not going to leave them there. And then Bliss wakes up. And Jack gets on his mad face.
I love how the scene where Bliss wakes up is very clear that he's waking up. You don't actually need to know that. You don't actually need to read the words Bliss is awake, but they put it in there anyway. But it was very clear to me that Bliss had awoken.
I really liked the panel. I don't think it was clear something happened. I don't know if I would have jumped in and be like, oh, he must be awake. It was like, what's going on? Is he, you know? Yeah, but it's really nice of showing their back under. Maybe I would have known. I don't know.
I managed to connect the dots because of that little guy at the background. I think it's Renee. He's grabbing his head. Yeah, I wouldn't have known if I didn't see him, so.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, they do tell you Bliss is awake, and that page where Bliss is awake, and I had to Google for something. Do you know what I Googled for?
I do not know.
Oh,
Let me guess.
Okay.
Wesley Dodds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sandman.
Oh man, Wesley Dodds. I could go on about Sandman. But we'll have other chances to talk about Sandman.
Mm.
Not that I'm hinting at a later issue or anything. Said okay. Hinting at a later issue.
Okay. He's mentioned twice in this issue, so. I liked how this is, like, very meta, like, it's referencing itself. The universe references itself. I love it when things like that happen.
Yeah.
So.
And especially at this point where I can't remember, in 95, I don't think Wesley Dodds was as often used in the comics. So not only, so it's almost, in keeping with Jack's interests. You know, so I like that even when it's being meta, it's being meta appropriately.
Yeah. Yay, props to you guys, creators!
But before we get to the Bliss fight, we have interlude one.
This was strange a little bit. I seem to have seen this like, it looks like, you know, Old West. It's really like, hey, Sheriff.
Howdy, partner.
Yeah, this appeared before, didn't it? Like, somewhere. A scene like that.
I'm trying to remember, because I know we had the Shade asking Jack if he had any memories of being a sheriff.
Right.
And I can't remember if when he was asking that, if there was accompanying art.
I think there might have been. It was probably that issue where he gave Jack the diaries, the journals to read. Yeah. So, anyways, yes. I can't help but think these are related. But Matthew O'Dea, he's part of that group of cops that came to save Ted or something. Came to protect Ted, right?
Yep. And he's a crooked cop. Crooked cop.
Yeah. And it's mentioned here that his family would kill him if they knew, so he is probably the bad apple. Yeah, black sheep of the family, unfortunately. But wouldn't they know? Wouldn't his siblings find out that, you know, he is corrupt because he lives in a nice apartment on Noodle Avenue?
And like, I don't know, like. I mean, maybe it's one of those things where he's able to give them, like, a reasonable excuse. And maybe it's also that combination of they don't know because they also don't really want to know. A little bit of willful ignorance there.
Yeah. So, is that all for the first interlude?
Kind of. I mean, I always have these little moments sometimes where I see, like, Matthew, he's in bed, and he's in bed with a woman. And I always kind of wonder in moments like this of, like, what is their story romantically? Like, is... Because especially when we're talking about, like, you know, him being, you know, like, the dirty cop. And there's just the kind of wonder of, like, is this someone in his life? Or is this just, like, someone who's... It's just kind of like the one-night stand. Or even the kind of, like, well, I did business and they provided me with a woman for the night. Like, I don't know. It's just one of those little things that pops in my head that never really gets answered. But there it is. And that's all the other thing I got.
Yeah. Oh no, I actually read spoilers on dc.wikia.com. My eyes, they burn. Yeah, anyways, yes. Okay, I know why he talks about Brian Savage. I don't know how it's linked to Starman, so yay.
Okay. Well, no more spoilers for you, young lady.
Okay. Interlude 2?
I really like that this monster, this poster monster, is very different from Monster 1.
Yeah. I mean, it says heaven here, so...
Yeah. And it's just like a little reminder of like, hey, there you go.
But one thing I felt really weird was that ragdoll at this Saladimon's.
Yeah.
A right leg.
Well, I mean, what all is in this guy's bag? We've got like, we've got a finger. We've got like a like kind of an African statue looking thing. What looks to be a couple of condoms, a half-eaten donut, paper umbrellas, dentures, maybe?
Yeah, and what looks like a whole telephone, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, or is that supposed to be a mouse or a whole telephone? Or
yeah, I was like, is that a mouse?
Yeah. This guy is really keeping a lot of crazy stuff in his briefcase.
Yeah. And it's a small briefcase. It's not
really... Yeah. Huge. A full water bottle. Yeah, that's odd. Like, what's this? Forget the story of the girl in the bed. What's the story of a guy walking around with an extra finger?
I know, right? Yeah. Oh, could it be his finger? No, 1, 2, 3.
Nah, he's got
1, 2, 3,
4,
5. Okay.
Unless he had a sixth finger.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. None of it. No, he does not look like he's missing a digit. No. There's no like bloody gaping wound.
Yeah, if anyone well, Tony Harris, if you're listening to this, why does he have a finger?
Yeah. A trick finger that he uses as backup for nose picking. I don't know.
I'm just trying to think of how that would work.
Oh, I don't want to dirty my fingers. Let's use this one to pick my nose.
So then you're holding your nose-picking finger?
Yeah.
So, sounds good. And then in the next page...
Next page.
More of Sneaky Jack.
Sneaky Jack. And interestingly, I thought... he talks a lot in his head in this one. But the scene doesn't really change. So, I can't tell. Is he moving stealthily or is he moving fast?
Yeah, like... You know, I mean, I'm on record. I like the style of page layouts. But I was kind of thinking the same thing. Is he moving... Because, is he moving fast? Is he moving... it almost feels like he's moving clumsily.
What does he say, though? I'm great, I'm fighting a demon. Ah, oh, damn it. It's like that, right?
Yeah. And he makes reference to Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol.
Yeah, Doom Patrol is a long-running, it's a long-historied DC comic of off-kilter superheroes.
I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you, like, is he talking about DC comic?
Yeah. And that's one of the things, is one of their popular comics. I can't remember if this is from their more modern series or the older series. I've read it, but my head is not unjumbled right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they died to save 14 people.
Okay, yeah, and I thought it was kind of cool that Jack, he drew a parallel between that and what he's going to do. And he's like, are these people, these special people going to be the people he will die for?
Yeah. And then, just like the start of the issue, the next page, he undercuts it. I was like, wait, whoa, what am I talking about here? Whoa, what am I thinking? I don't want to die. Like, I can't. You know, okay. And he just kind of gets the idea of, and I think this is a little later on, of like, you know, this, he can't go in here expecting to die. Yeah. He's got to do anything he can to not die.
Mm-hmm. There's always, like, you know, the classic devil's adversary and the angel sitting on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. He's always going through that, I think.
Yeah.
And over here, too, you know, well, I should get away, whoa, cowboy, no running, you know, people depend on you, blah, 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 and so, yeah, angel wins, stuff like that, yeah. So, I think that makes it a bit more real, you know, compared to Captain America types, where it's very, let's go and save the world!
I think having a little bit of self-doubt, especially for a new hero. I've read a lot of comics, and some things that always bothers me is when you get a new hero or someone who's just learning their powers, and within the space of like 2 pages, they're suddenly masters at everything they could do and very confident and in control. Mm-hmm. And I like that Jack's still kind of like, I'm not so sure of myself, because he's only been doing this like a week. I also like how on this page where we kind of get the lantern lit Bliss, that Bliss looks a lot more menacing, a lot more powerful than he did in the previous issue. Like he comes off as a stronger, eviler figure here than I remember in the previous issue.
Yeah. And also because he transforms, I think.
Yeah.
That was a big thing for me.
Oh yeah, that transformation. Like it, especially because you can almost see the start of a transformation in that last panel on this page, where his face is kind of tilted down.
Yeah.
And then you flip that page and you have him attacking Jack, and you can just feel the motion of him jumping off the steps, the porch, and getting Jack.
Yeah. He even grabs the rod.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the thing is, he is ugly.
Yeah.
So ugly.
And I think what adds the motion in the page with the attack is Bliss. It somehow makes him more monstrous, but he doesn't look like he's in focus. It looks like he's moving too fast for the art to kind of get a bead on him.
This is us. And interestingly, he considers that his captives to be on his side, like for real, I think. We see, you know, he refers to them as us, and way back of this issue, he does that reference to the Bible. You know, my children, why
hast
thou forsaken me, or something? Why hast thou forsaken me? Yeah. But we'll come to that.
Yeah. Well, there's construction going on outside my apartment, so if people listening at home, if you hear a buzzing going on, well, there's really not much I can do about that. If the mic isn't picking up, then just ignore what I'm saying. But you might hear some power tools going off, because I live in a big city, and that happens. Yeah. Okay.
Next page,
and oh, he just gets more monstrous, and
even when he's getting blasted, mm. I don't know, it doesn't really feel like Bliss is being too injured here.
Mm. He manages to quip, like, you know, this is not my favorite flavor of energy.
Mm. Yeah.
But the fact that he manages to suck the energy off Jack, you can get a handle of, you know, how strong Bliss actually is.
Yeah, I feel tired. I shouldn't feel. Can't think straight.
Yeah, yeah. But because of this, you know, I think it makes us realize as well how strong Jack is, because he realizes that his energy is being sapped. And I think, you know, that's not easy. It's not a... He might not be... he might still be a rookie superhero, but he's one of those gifted types, I think.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It shows that he's aware, without making his skills seem inflated.
Yeah.
And then in the next page, we've talked about this before, the change in narrator. You know, the circus workers look on. Those that stay to look on. And, you know, and the way it kind of changes to that, what is it, third-person omniscient? Is that what I'm thinking?
Yeah, I think so.
It changes to that, and then we get, like, Jack kind of talking again, and then we go back to the third-person narrator.
Mm.
It's just, I don't know, it's really well done.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. And it's that, in the narrative, it also talks about how people run away and people stay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I know it. Without the narrator, I don't think you would be able to get a hold of that, because Jack is busy fighting.
Yeah,
Bliss. Yeah, so you do see that bit of importance in the narrative as well, and brings it up. Yeah, so.
Especially because it kind of makes a point from here on out of it wasn't just the conflict where Bliss is defeated. It's that, like, the hope, the positivity that does as much damage.
Mm.
And having his, I guess, the evil true believers of Bliss fleeing, and those that stay being the ones that want him to lose, feels like it does a lot to kind of shift the momentum of the battle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Looking at the battle from another perspective and stuff like that, right? It's very... I think it makes it so that the hope theme isn't tacky, you know? Yeah. Because imagine if there wasn't this scene, and then at the end there's, like, and they all band together in hope. And it would feel quite forced, I think.
Yeah, no, and this, it doesn't feel, it doesn't feel hokey, it feels hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I love that panel. I'm looking, I've kind of lost track of which page number we're on, but, you know, we've got... It's where the third person narration starts. We've got Jack in the middle, and that little small panel on the bottom of Michael, the blue skin cosmic geek.
Yep.
Just the way his face looks, and it's that kind of an impassive face, but there's something about the eyes that's watching.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a very moving, emotive picture of someone who's not being expressive.
Yeah. You can hear the violins. Yeah, yeah.
Small at first.
Yeah. And they build up. Mm. Yeah. Oh. And then, can we flip the page?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's funny because over here, we have Jack. I need a breather. I'm going to fly. I hope he can. Oh.
Oh, he can.
Yeah. Yeah, he flies too. But the thing is, over here, you realize that, okay, so Jack has his limitations. And he is feeling the pressure, and he is gonna get into trouble if he does not get a break from Bliss at one point.
And even even yes. without that, he still has that, like, yeah, come on then. Like, he still, he needs that breather, but he's still kind of being aggressive about it. I like that. And then...
And then someone appears, and it is Michael.
Well, before Michael comes in, because we just got Michael like almost doing the Superman pose of, you can hear da 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 da, and but before we get to that, we get Crusher going. Oh, Crush!
Yeah, he looks like an ape.
Yeah, he really does.
Yeah,
and I like that. In a way, Crusher has been built up and seen as a menace, but all it takes is one, like, zap. It's almost an afterthought of, like, I don't... You, go away, Crusher.
Yeah.
You bother me.
Yeah. Can you translate the panel on the right where Crusher's being hit by the beam from the rod?
Mm.
It says, like, no tall... What is it supposed to be?
Like, I'm wondering if Tor is like a barbarian character.
Oh,
I don't know. Like that, I wasn't quite sure of, and I looked and was like, it's probably just, you know.
Yeah, probably
one
just
one of those many references I don't get.
Yeah, or I mean, you know, Jack and his esoteric. It's very unique. So.
Yeah. So I. Can't quite translate, but
okay. Just wondering if you knew. Okay,
but then we get Bliss kind of doing the whole, like, I'm going to eat you.
yeah. Because he's like, oh, you have a really good heart and delicious heart. You know what? I think now I finally see why my soul has this like shining.
It could be that. Well, we're definitely seeing that something about Michael is special. And you know, Jack's flying around, zapping Bliss, and it's. I think this is. And now my birds are talking. This is just going to be the episode for sound effects. That's first good. Construction, now my bird saying play with us.
It's okay. We welcome it. I welcome it.
I like how it's the balance between Jack flying and the kind of like, this is also happening and it's important. Kind of going back to the crowd and to Michael and the feeling has a name, hope.
I know, when Michael steps up, I think the others also realize that one of them fighting back.
Yeah. And the music swells and Michael flies.
Yeah. The art is actually really cool here. And, you know, Michael really takes center stage, and you see in that page where he is, it's just Michael. On the ground, we have like all the people, all the little, you know, shadowy figures cheering for him, and that's definitely Octavia with the tentacles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Solidarity.
And the clown kind of putting his hand on Michael, like maybe not holding him back, but it. It's a little touch, but it does feel like a gesture of concern.
Mm-mm.
You know, showing that they... that these are good people, even if they are... well, a little freakish.
Agreed. Yeah. All right. And we go to the twin beams.
I love it.
Twin beams.
Yeah, the twin beams, them zapping them. Is the power combined two heroes? Is that why Bliss suddenly is suddenly weak and wet with fear? Mm. But if that pain is gone, their pain, replaced by hope, then just perhaps, so goes his power. It's such a good little lead up, and it's the whole last 10 pages feel like they're just building to this moment.
Mm.
You know, it's been a very nice slow burn, so it feels so powerful.
Yeah. The biblical reference.
Mm-mm.
Oh, my children, why hast thou forsaken me?
Mm. Which, you know, is an interesting phrase for a demon.
Yeah.
To quote.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I'm pretty sure that came from the other side, buddy. I don't think that guy was playing for your team.
Yeah. I think the last bit is by Jack. He says, cool, but what a drama queen. Thought he'd never go.
Yeah.
But he makes so light of the situation. Jack.
And just the blacks and the detail on this, which I guess we all owe to Grobbinger, who we don't sing his praises enough of how great the inks look on this, but especially around like Bliss's fingers, those thick lines really bring it home that he's like reaching up for us and the way it breaks the panel barrier.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I like it. Alright.
The next page where we have this the circus and the storm and the lightning, but then everything's kind of calm.
And smoke billowing. Was that all? Maybe those are clouds.
Yeah, to me they looked more like clouds, but you know.
Mimicking smoke?
Mimicking, I like it.
Yes.
And then our two heroes land and
Starsky and Hutch. Starsky and Hutch reference.
And we get the clown and the fish man and the wolf man, cat man. You did it.
Yeah.
And you know, the very last page. Is it okay to jump there?
Yeah, go ahead.
The very last page, like, it comes this close to being hokey.
I know, like, what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I feel they've earned it, so I don't mind it. But the we're free! Huzzah! You know, it's like, you know what? Sure, you got me. I liked it enough where I'll allow it.
You know, Michael's crying.
Yeah, because he's so happy. And, you know, it's kind of like little things kind of make me go like, well, we probably shouldn't have had that arrow pointing to make it seem like Michael saying we're free because he hasn't spoken yet, so I don't think that's him. But, you know, that's kind of nitpicky.
It's okay, it's subtitles for his alien language. Yeah. I mean, he does speak, but it's always inscribed as some blue squiggle. Yeah. So, yeah. I think at the end you also do... Well, Jack also gets a moment where he really... What's that word? Is that word for enjoy? He relishes the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's like, oh, I did a hero thing.
And, you know, I really like how just the dialogue goes like, no, I can't let this get to me. I gotta drive a hard deal. I've gotta get the bargain, you know, get some posters or something.
Yeah.
And then he's like, but, I mean, just this kind of like being a hero, this was sure feels good. You softy Jack Knight.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how Jack is like really solidly depicted in this, all these, throughout the whole story.
Mm.
We know who exactly Jack is.
Yeah. Yeah. They do such a good job of not only characterizing him, but consistently. Mm-hmm. Even when he's flopping back and forth of what his of like how he thinks, it's Jack.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's as people, we have conflicting impulses and conflicting emotions.
Mm.
And they run with that, which, you know, having that kind of conflict within him makes him feel more realistic and more fleshed out.
Mm-mm-mm. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
The end.
The end. We're at an hour and 10 minutes. Just on show, not even intro and outro. What do you overall thoughts on the issue?
I really liked it. Is that lame? let me think of something.
Did it make you feel good?
I did, because I mean, We Are Free. It's like every kid's movie.
Mm.
At the end, you know, that was what I thought. Was this a Disney movie?
Yeah.
But they deserve it. Mm. I think every story needs moments like these. We don't want to be always like inundated with, and then they all died.
Yeah, nah.
Yeah. It's superheroes, right? Comics. Yeah. That's why fandom exploded when Marvel revealed that Captain America was with Hydra all along. It's those type of things.
Don't even talk to me about that. That's just bad story.
Yeah, so I'm on the same page as you with that. It's like, we want the good to happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think having bits like this where it's, you know what? Hope and positivity save the day. Deal with it.
Yeah.
It's earned. The whole thing sets it up, and I think, like, before I was asking, was it too much exposition? But I think that exposition makes this ending possible.
Mm.
You know? And that's probably actually exactly what you said.
No, but you conveyed it a lot more succinctly. Yeah, so it's okay. It's not plagiarism. It's fine.
Sure. I know you. You're going to the cops, gonna rat me out.
No, I'm not. Then I call O'Dare.
Yeah. Good issue. I guess we can just go ahead and wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
Where can they find you?
Oh, mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, please. See you next issue, but yes, we have to talk about where people
we can. We are very important people, and we want to make sure everyone on the internet knows where to find us.
So, plug time.
You're so excited. Where can they find you, Lydia?
Well, very casually, I'm going to say that you can find me on Twitter, on Facebook, a little bit on YouTube. I'm going to go back soon, I hope. My username is Quek Channel on all of those platforms, Quek Channel. So, yeah. And I'm friends with Brent on all of these channels. So you can search for Brent at...
Oh, you can find me on Twitter. I'm Dead Troubadour. My main website is deadlytroubadour.com. On Facebook, you can find me just by doing like the Brent Thomas... Look for my author page, or you can go to Comics League International, which you basically get the same content as the Brent Thomas page, but you only get it when it's related to like podcasting or comics. So if you don't want to hear me talk about like how awesome my baby is, then you know you probably just like Comics League International. And don't forget to you can subscribe to Comics League International through iTunes. And, of course, rating and reviewing the show and telling your friends about it really helps spread the word.
Since we've started talking about Starman, we've actually gotten a little bump in numbers. But you know, I think we're doing a good show, and I think we could deal with a few more listeners. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, and you know, all these things are really hard to sustain. You know, with all the time that we put in, so we would really appreciate your support for Britain's Patreon.
Oh, thank you so much! Thank you so much. Yes, if you go to patreon.com and search for Brent Thomas, and there'll probably be a link in the show notes as well. You know, even just pledging $1 a month, you know, it really helps, not only just kind of financially, but also it's a nice little shot in the arm of like a motivation to be like, okay, there's another person listening, who kind of says like, I'm enjoying this enough where I'll give you $12 a year. And that really does help continue both the writing and the podcasting, because it doesn't exactly happen overnight getting this show ready. So it does make me feel better when people do offer. So yeah, please.
Yay.
Yeah. All right. Well, clever segue to the end.
Very.
Hope. Bye.
See ya.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.